Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder that I don't run any ads, so this podcast can only grow with your support. If you learned something new that you found useful, please do rate and review the podcast. And if you think the content can help someone get out of pain, improve their life, move without injuries, or even just feel more inspired, please share it with them. It would mean the absolute world to me, and you never know, we just might help elevate our community along the way. Very excited today to be welcoming Tony Ryan onto the show. Tony used to work for Z Health, and Z Health, as you know, is just this incredible company that teaches us how the nervous system can be tweaked in a million different ways to improve performance and help manage pain. And so what Tony has done, he used to work for Z Health, but he now has set up on his own to help people with all of this knowledge that Z Health has equipped us with in rehabilitating PTSD, ADD, autism, chronic pain, many other chronic issues that come along with the landscape of being a professional athlete or, having graduated from working in the army. You know, he's one of those people that works alongside other amazing practitioners like doctors and PTs and chiropractors. But of course, because of the information Z Health has equipped him with, he looks at things through a unique lens. And it's this brain-based approach that I am a huge advocate of. And that's why I had to bring Tony on the show. This episode has been broken up into two parts. And this is your part one. I am so excited that at last I get to interview Tony Ryan. Hey, Tony, welcome to Love at First Science.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it's going to be so good to talk because you and I were just reminiscing that where we first met was I was on Z Health training courses and you were the incredible person actually answering all the questions coming into the DMs. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it just made such a difference knowing that, yes, there were lots of us on the call, sometimes 200, 300 plus people, but you actually took the time to write back to me personally, making sure that I understood everything. And I remember you actually jumped on personal calls with me a bunch of times when I was, you know, still in the old days of like, hang on, pain is an output and posture. Hang on, we don't need to be that anal about posture. So a personal thank you before we get started.
Yes. I love it. That was awesome. And that's such a great experience with Z Health, being able to do that too. Because there is that element of when you're learning this stuff, it can feel so overwhelming for people and so complicated because it's like nothing you've ever experienced. No one's opened your eyes to that lens. So that was a really enjoyable season of my life to be able to do that for people and particularly meet cool people like yourselves as well. So I enjoyed
it. Yeah, it's good that we get to connect like this now because I know that you have over 400 hours of Z Health hours. And that's not to mention clinical experience. I mean, that's just study time.
Yeah.
Probably even more than that, because that's just the video content.
Yeah, exactly. And the amount of courses, when we used to do live courses back in the day and all that, pre-2020, there's a lot of hours in there. I thought about it when I was talking to my wife the other day. I was like, I've actually invested a lot of time in this. Like, it makes sense that it's kind of second nature now, which is really nice.
It's so cool. I'm so glad. So I'm glad you're here. I'm also glad you're working in this field because you get to help a lot of people. And actually, one of the things I wanted to start the interview with was, can you just tell us a bit about your journey, your story, and how you got to where you are now and where that is?
Yeah, that's great. So I've basically been training people since I was 12 or 13, actually, because my dad was an American football player at Penn State. And so we always had a weight set in the backyard. I had grown up watching him lift weights since I was 5 or 6. And I had gotten into that at a young age, 11 or 12, and just to help with sport because I wanted to be good at sport or whatever I was doing. And actually, having grown up, I had a hypothyroid issue. So I had Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune issue. So I was always overweight. So I was always training to try to be able to overcome that and actually just get better, mostly for sport because that's the thing you do when you're a young man. As I got through that, as I was working through that, I eventually got older, got into some semi-professional, like indoor soccer and some things over here. So fairly competitive, but not at the highest level. But I ended up picking up a lot of injuries and I love training and I was a personal trainer and, professionally and was just in that field, but I just kept hurting myself, whether it was in the gym or something. And I never knew why, even though I had however many concussions and all these other issues. And then eventually that path led me digging down the rabbit hole as far as I could go. And I had been exposed to Z Health years prior and finally found some material from them that like clicked with me. Like I saw the 8 levels model in a little like webinar from Dr. Cobb. And he's like, hey, if you're having issues, like it could be an issue in any of these areas, like the cortex, the brainstem, the spinal cord, peripheral nerves, receptors. And I was like, did someone just give me a roadmap to go looking for my problems? Like literally, it was like, there's a roadmap. And I'm like, I haven't looked anywhere in there. And so I had gotten to a point where I had a kind of a nerve injury in my left sciatic nerve. And I'd start to get some like atrophy in my leg and my calf. And it was starting to degrade. And it was like, I was not feeling like myself. So I was turning into this very typical chronic pain patient, like central sensitization of like, I was hypersensitive to everything. It was affecting my marriage. It was affecting my work. It was just really, I was on a downward trajectory and it was not good. So found Z Health and just kind of dug straight into that and got stuck in and started working on that. And it was just moving me in the right direction. And I've gotten to a point now where I can do all the things I want to do and help other people do that too. So
amazing.
Long and short of it, really.
So hang on, just fill us in with what it is that you're doing now. You're clinically working with different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I, before I had worked with Z Health, like probably 5 or 6 years prior, I'd worked at a physical therapy clinic. So I had my own training business and then worked out of a physical therapy clinic, basically taking referrals from the clinic of people they couldn't fix. I was taking referrals from like pediatric cardiologists or people that had like autistic or ADD kids that they couldn't help. Like that was getting just this conglomerate of people as I was learning the Z Health material that I could come in and basically experiment on because no one else could help them. And I was like a last resort. So like I got to use all this stuff on a bunch of different populations. And so I got like that clinical experience, got to work with Z Health for a couple of years, which was amazing. And then now I'm back in the end user market where doing some online programs. One of my main ones is particularly for people in pain because I know that area so well. I've helped so many people with it and personally experienced it. So like I have a program up for pain and then working into this, what I would call a tactical athlete over here, but it's mostly just first responders, military that need training to be able to perform well under stress. And a lot of the tools they're getting are kind of primal. They're not really well thought out. They're a little bit just hit it as hard as you can and not really think about building other skills. So I'm building into that market with a couple of things as well. And I think there was one other thing. Oh, I'm doing some other post-traumatic stress work as well with some organizations over here that help veteran first responders and military as well. Because that's a big deal for a lot of our population with the global war on terror and things like that. And I have some experience doing that with people in person. So putting together some things for a bunch of different populations, just because my heart goes in a bunch of different directions to help people. And I know they won't necessarily get the help they need looking elsewhere. So I feel a moral obligation and responsibility to work my tail off to be able to get this out to as many people as I can.
I mean, you touched on so much stuff there and I was like, I'm going to pick one thing and then ask you about that. And wow, now I'm like, where do I begin? Yeah. But I think one of the things that really did kind of, caught my attention because you put it really beautifully and maybe you were being really nice, actually. You were saying a lot of the tools that people are being given as first responders or in the military is sort of primal. They're not well thought out. And I was thinking, well, that's all the training that we get, whether that's you in university learning an academic subject or whether that's you in the gym just trying to get bigger biceps. Like people don't really, I don't think, have given the knowledge that you and I have now about how the nervous system is laid out. We're kind of attacking things from the wrong end. Can you give us a little bit more depth around this?
Yeah, I think it's just, there's a lot of trial and error that people have done. So they just do what other people have done because they've always done it. And as science expands and you get enough research to understand how things work, I think there's just ways to cut in and help people be more efficient because a lot of the methods, I mean, you probably see it in the social media world or in the yoga world, like there are some people that are maybe genetically more apt to do this thing or they respond better to these stimulus. So they're just going to adapt better and they're probably going to be popular in their field and be better off. But how do you help the lower 50% actually achieve those things? Because they can make those adaptations, but if we're giving them the wrong exercise or the wrong stimulus and the wrong amount of it and the wrong load, then of course they're not going to adapt. Their brain might protect or it might not be enough for them. So I think in that sense, you could apply that to anything, like you said, health and fitness, whether it's bigger biceps, whether it's tactical training, whether it's yoga, and go, hey, if you actually, and it comes down to individualization, right? And just understanding that everyone at some level has to individualize training for themselves, and they have to individualize their goals as well. I think so much of, I would say health and fitness, I can just put it in a category. So much of health and fitness is not about health and fitness. It's about aesthetics and who looks like what. Like if you take those people out to perform any sort of useful human skill, they're really not that good at any of it. And I think that comes down to like the individual being like, hey, what is health for you? What is success for you on a physical level? Instead of maybe following someone else's goals and actually figuring out what that is for yourself, then your training will dictate how you get there. And you'll start to probably think it through a little bit differently, if that makes sense.
So yeah, it does. And I think just one of the goals I have with this podcast is to give people really tangible tools that they can walk mm-hmm. away with. So yeah. I guess you alluded to the 8 levels model. Do you still utilize that when you're working with people? Or is there like a set things that you usually run through to check, you know, how is someone's brain/body performing and how can we get them to the goals that they've set?
Yeah, 100%. There's a lot of different things, obviously, that you could check because you could check any input. But for me, typically, I don't know whether it's a bias for me because of my background with TBI or what it might be. But
what's
like,
TBI?
TBI is traumatic brain injury. So,
okay, guys. So yeah, just so you know, Tony's going to fill mm-hmm. us in on what happened to him. Who dropped you on the head, Tony?
I fell off a bunk bed when I was like 3 or 4. I hit my head really? On the edge of a pool. Yeah, when I was like 4 or 5. And it was, so when we went through all the ZLP material, when I was actually learning it all, you would go back in the structure course and go through your entire health history and be like, the question was always, what happened before what happened? Meaning like, hey, dig a little deeper and figure out, like, why did these outputs come about, right? And for me, it was like, oh, it's not coincidence to me that I had 2 hits in the head, basically, at 3 and 4. And then at 5, I start having hot flashes and migraines, and then I get diagnosed with an autoimmune issue. To me, there's not really a coincidence there. There's just like a, hey, cause and effect. Right.
Definitely. And sorry to interject, nope. But I just want to throw this in there because I think a lot of people don't realize how important it is to go that far back. Because a lot of people are like, yeah, but it wasn't that bad. I was super young. I always mm-hmm. get that when I'm taking history for clients. They're like, but I was only 3. Like, what's that going to do? But actually, it can set the course for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. And I think that's almost more, I've taken health histories that far where they literally would go back and ask their mom and they're like, yeah, you fell down the stairs when you were like 1.5, or like someone dropped you. And I've, because they're like, well, I've always had this issue. And I'll be like, maybe, or like, but when did it start? Like really? And then you can go back and go, okay, like now again, I can't go back and fix that, but I can go, hey, at least we know this happened and it probably was like a cause and effect thing. And now we can actually start to rehab it and retrain it and do all the things that neuroplasticity is great for, which is just work in whatever direction and mold you in whatever direction we want to go.
Like so much hope. That deep.
Yeah.
Hey, my loves, real quick, if you are hypermobile, be sure to check out my book, Too Flexible to Feel Good, where my co-author and I share the latest science on how to help a bendy body feel awesome. If you already have the book, please do leave it an Amazon review. It helps more than you could ever know, and it just might help someone else feel a bit more stable in their bodies. The book is called Too Flexible to Feel Good, and you can get it from most online retailers. Okay, but listen, we did get off track because first of all, I wanted to find out about your situation. You obviously had a traumatic brain injury mm-hmm. at very young, 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. And you were saying that is one of the reasons you have a specific protocol that you use, right?
Yeah. Typically, I mean, and it would be because of maybe some traumatic brain injury or concussion type things, but also if you just look at the general population, like fitness, particularly most people do fitness as like a general way of like thinking they're healthy and exercising all those things. And it's fantastic. Like I would much rather have people moving than not moving. So there's not a massive criticism for that. There's just other elements that I always want to look at. And in that same vein, we go, people are lacking visual skills and they're lacking vestibular skills. They do not move their head. Everything in a gym for the most part is set up to have a very stable midline and a stable head, which is not how basically we've grown up in nature as humans. And then same with eye movements as well. Like we lack visual skills because most of us are in front of a screen 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day. Which is fine. We have to do that for work, but can we also start to mitigate some of those negative effects by doing that training and actually keeping some of those skills alive? Because our brain is use it or lose it. Most people just tend to lose it and stop using it. So it's really a, for me, if I go, hey, the brain wants to be able to predict well to keep us safe. And these two skills, my vestibular system and my visual system, like using those skills helps me predict the most accurately. Then that's the biggest high payoff. That's the biggest bang for my buck in terms of giving people tools to be able to use, to be able to help decrease threat and increase performance for them.
I've actually got butterflies in my stomach as you're talking. And it's weird because I've actually heard the same message so many times, but then hearing you say it, I'm like, I get like, I don't know, like a little schoolgirl that's really excited about Christmas morning or something, because I feel like it's the missing link that we just haven't been able to share widely enough yet to really help people.
Yep. And that's why I'm on a mission just actually crushing this thing, because it just breaks my heart to see people. First, like, I know where I was 6 or 7 years ago, and it breaks my heart to see people there and really not get the answers that are there, especially with as much information as on the internet these days.
Oh, to go like, so, hey,
no
crazy.
One's telling you this, like, it's almost embarrassing for me as a professional that people don't know it. So I just, yeah, I have to wake up every morning with this fire in my belly and just go, okay, here we go again.
Here we go. Oh no, I'm so happy that you're doing this. Cause I think we were, you know, before I plan out my questions, I always think, you know, what do people really need to know? And also how does that fit into what the person I'm interviewing knows? And I kind of went down a little rabbit hole of thoughts about just how frustrated I am about the poor quality information that's still being put out there by the fitness industry. Like, I'm like, guys, really? We're still talking about squeeze your core tight the entire time? Like, it's just, although we're still telling people things like don't engage your glutes if you're going into extension. Like, I can't believe we're still there. It frustrates me.
Yeah. And it's such a, it's like losing the forest through the trees mentality. Like you're looking so specifically and hyper-focusing on these little things that kind of don't matter. And you're missing the big picture, which I always, that's why I used the term when we talked about the visual and vestibular skills of going like, my brain just wants to predict better. And if it predicts better if it has better information coming in. And some of the easiest ways to get better information coming in are through those systems. And if we just look at it globally like that, like, how much easier is it to do a backbend if I can just see the world better, or if my vestibular system?
I don't have to think about every single muscle. I don't have to think that hard. I can just do the movement, and everything that's supposed to work will work.
Yeah.
So tell me this. I love your Instagram. I'm a big fan. I'll just say that.
Awesome.
Please follow Tony on Instagram and also YouTube. He's got some amazing content. And you were being interviewed on another podcast, and you were talking about the OOPDA loop.
Yeah, the OOPDA loop. Yep.
Yeah, OODA loop. Sorry, because I'd never heard that phrase before, but it just made me feel like there's some kind of cycle going on. And obviously, given the knowledge we have, it made sense straight away. But can you please break it down for the listeners on Love at First Science?
Yeah. So the OODA loop was an old like concept defined by a guy named John Boyd. He was a colonel in the U.S. Army or the Air Force. I think he was helping them basically with dogfights in planes so they could defeat the Russian MiGs back in the 60s and 70s and things like that when there were dogfights. And it was basically
what do you mean a dogfight?
Two planes that are attacking each other.
Oh, because my mind went to dogs.
Okay.
I was the military have doggies fighting each other. That doesn't sound right.
No.
Okay, so planes are coming. And what is the guy trying to do? Like,
so basically, he was trying to break down the science of like, hey, that stuff's happening super fast, and I don't know all the details, but like, if I have a plane going, let's just say 400 or 500 miles an hour, maybe 6 or 7, I think it's up to some of those faster rates, and they're coming at each other. So like double that speed, how fast do I have to process information and actually work through that? So the idea was observe, orient, decision, and then action. So the observation part makes sense, right? We can speed that up via visual information and things that I'm basically able to receive from the external environment. My orientation to that information is like the interpretation process of how I orient myself to that based on my previous experience, based on my training, based on my pattern recognition ability. How does that information orient to me? Where if you see someone doing a backbend or a certain pose in yoga, you have a different orientation to that visual information than I do based on my lack of experience, right? There's a very different orientation, but we're getting the same observation, right? We're seeing the exact same thing. right? So we all have that different orientation, and we can build that and modify that. And then decision, obviously, we make decisions about that. So my frontal lobe being able to actually go, hey, action, like this is what I want to do, and then doing the action of it, right? But we're basically running on that constantly. And that was the whole Z Health of like, take an input, interpret and make a decision about it, and then do an output. I think that was Dr. Cobb's way of simplifying it for a civilian population.
Yeah, it's just pure genius. I think it's everything he does is very smart.
Ridiculous.
Very, very clever.
He's
man.
Ridiculous. Gosh.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. Just, yeah. Just shout out to Dr. Cobb. We think you're amazing.
We do 100%. So yeah, that's where that all came from. And I explained that because the tactical community knows that. They're like, oh, the OODA loop, but they're very primitive about it. They just don't think of like, yeah. Cause most
we can
of them
use this
say,
elsewhere.
Yeah. Most of them think the orient part is like, oh, I orient my body to the threat. And I'm like, that's not what it means at all. If you go look at it. So it's actually, again, my interpretation on a subcognitive level of like, how do I respond to that information? What does that pattern mean to me? Cause it's happening so fast. Right. But yeah, when you break it down for people, you start to actually empower them to go like, oh, wow, I didn't realize, like, I was trained to think this way about like this incoming stimulus, or I was trained to have this pattern. And now I can start to change my interpretation of XYZ stimulus, whatever it is coming in. And that changes every output I have now, which is a really cool way to do it.
And so what do you see? So how can I phrase this question? Is this something that we observe happening, or what is actually happening in the world around us in terms of people physically helping someone get better at something? Like, when you have this model, the OODA loop, mm-hmm. the three steps, mm-hmm. I take in information, I process it, and then I choose how I'm going to respond to it. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got this information about how your brain and your nervous system and your body works. What is it something that you're observing happening in the world around you, and what do we need to do to change it?
So something that I think should get changed, maybe in an industry or like the way that we're taking in that information, or what do you
Yeah, think? I guess I'm just trying to say, like, what is happening? Where do people put most of their focus, and how is that ineffective?
You know what I really think? I think most people don't have a focus, and I think that's why it's ineffective. I think most people don't have enough self-awareness to understand, oh, like if someone comes, like, let's take the very simple example of like, I come home to my wife and I'm not thinking about how I feel, I'm not thinking about XYZ thing just happened, or someone just cut me off when I was driving home, and blah, 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 whatever. Take whatever negative stimulus, ignore the fact that like, I didn't take the time to interpret that and go, hey, that person might've just had a bad day. Like, it's all good. I get to go home and see my wife now. They're not focused on any of that. Maybe they don't have the awareness to be, and now they're in a negative emotional state, and they come home and they try to have a conversation with their spouse, and all of a sudden, oh, I wonder why we're having tension. Yeah. Like, it's like, hey, like, I don't think most people are focusing enough to realize like, oh, like, I just feel like crap because this dude just cut me off on the, like, who cares? Move on. Right. I don't think there's enough self-awareness to even like inhibit that stimulus and like block it out and just go, that wasn't a big deal. That dude's just weird or whatever. Like, there's always those people, and then just move on. So that's where like, I don't think there's a focus, and that's why changing that interpretation part of that loop is big for me, because I can do it via conversation. I don't have to give you a drill to change your interpretation of anything. I can just explain to you scientifically the way the world works and the way your nervous system works. And I just changed the way you interpreted every stimulus. And that means I can just give you better output through a conversation. So that's one of the tools I always used as a coach that I tried to get across to people, particularly when I was coaching coaches at Z Health, is going like, it doesn't have to be a drill. Like, you can just be a good person and be nice to people, and you can change a bunch of outputs.
Wow. Right? You're so right. And also, you can just educate with your words. You don't have to give someone a specific drill. Thanks for listening. That was part one of the show. Next week, I'll be releasing part two. Remember, if this episode was helpful at all, please do share, rate, and review.